The Bernstein and Holmes Show.
Bears have done everything possible to make this as soft of a landing spot for Caleb Williams as you can.
It would be a shame if offensive line depth ends up being the Achilles heel. It's like they built a Death Star with an exhaust port that's vulnerable.
It's not even an exhaust port. You got a Death Star, but the shields are down. And it makes you very vulnerable.
We've got to give Han more time.
Han will have that shield down. We've got to give him more time.
Then he'll enjoy a smooth Colt 45.
Go right to the cantina and get yourself a Colt 45.
That would have been fun. That's just what they drink in the Mos Eisley cantina.
You just watch yourself. We're wanted men. I have the death sentence on 12 system.
Epic product placement.
For no, they never explain it.
I'll be careful.
You'll be dead.
That is everybody from every planet, no matter their race or extraction, enjoy the smoothness of a Colt 45 malt liquor.
What were those little guys with the hoods?
Jawas.
They all come out and they all have a little Colt 45. That's what they're holding.
And they're doing Edward 40 hands. They got it duct taped.
They're too heavy for those little guys.
What do you think a crocodile punter?
I definitely don't want that one.
Well, that a knife? This is a knife.
That's not a knife, that's a spoon.
All right, you win. I see you've played knifey spoony before.
Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 a.m. till 2 on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Going to get a Billy D. Williams. It works every time as he cracks the Colt 45 and the hot babe goes over and leans on his shoulder.
60% of the time it works every time.
I don't know. Not for Billy D. Williams.
No, it works every time.
It was every time for him. Come on now.
Sorry, you made a reference to a commercial that was before I was born. So the reference just...
Sorry.
Wow, it's Mr. Sensitive.
It's all right.
Jeez.
It's okay.
Mr. Snippy over there.
That's why I brought it up.
See, he's all stressed out because of the video game.
Because when you're a little kid and you're like, oh man, when I grow up, I'm gonna be cool.
I'm gonna end up being really handsome and
like Billy D. Williams.
Drink a Colt 45.
Yeah, once you crack one of these open, like, you know, you're watching the Miller Lite commercials, you know, you crack one open and like John Madden shows up, or like,
I also think that's great.
Bob Uecker shows up.
Fine.
And that's great, but Billy D is telling you, you hear that sound, and all of a sudden
there's talent.
There's a dime piece on your shoulder.
There's some talent that's going on.
That's right.
I was going to save this for High Noon, but since we were talking a little bit about Harrison Ford, Harrison Ford is going to play the president in the upcoming Captain America movie. So this is the fun part. There's one of the scenes that they put out there in the trailer has him in the White House, and you know how they're presidential portraits?
Yeah.
The rumor is that the portrait is Leslie Nielsen.
No.
Because he played the president in Scary Movie 3. So everyone is really hoping that Marvel did this.
Switch the sample.
It's a little blurry.
Get off my plane.
But if
especially if he's flying it.
If they are genius enough to put a Leslie Nielsen presidential portrait as a Easter egg.
That would be incredible.
That's an awesome Easter egg.
Especially if Leslie Nielsen is surreptitiously holding his infamous fart machine. Fart machine. Because that was his thing.
They're not doing Leslie Nielsen. They're doing Leslie Nielsen's character.
As the president.
As the president.
That would be a thing. Now, where did this rumor start?
On the interwebs.
Okay.
Internet.com.
All right.
DJBooth.net.
We're broadcasting live from the Hyundai
Reddit
Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. It is Hard Knocks Tuesday here. Good morning. It's Hard Knocks Tuesday. There's Ray Diaz. There's Adam Studzinski. Brandon Fryer. Connor O'Donnell. Kevin Lapka. Thanks to Lapka for his help in putting together the bingo card.
Yeah, card is set, and we will put it out there for consumption at 11:25 today. We will go through it. We will let you know what we ended up choosing as a team.
And everybody's excited.
My picture's on there. I, was very happy about that.
It better than it being the picture of bankruptcy.
Well, perhaps still.
Right.
There's still a lot of time left in the day.
You never know.
It's a different picture, though, so that's good.
The way things are going now, the way things, fast-moving things
It might be the picture of change before we know it.
That's right.
Who knows?
That's right. We don't know. But this feels like a game day.
Yeah, it feels like the beginning of something where, like I've been saying, all of this, you take these little baby steps towards the season starting. And so those baby steps are now where, okay, the Hall of Fame game happened. The Bears Hall of Famers have been enshrined. And we're going to talk with Jared Payton about that at 1 o'clock today. I can't wait to hear his stories. I talked with Rashid Davis yesterday on football night in Chicago. He said it was magnificent. And then he got like really emotional and he said that he brought his family because of how important all of this stuff was to him. He also said something that I thought was interesting about Devin as a returner, because you know Rashid was a really good returner too. And he said Devin, since his awareness of what was behind him, may have cost him more touchdowns. And then he elaborated and he goes, basically, because Devin was able to function where he's like, oh, this guy is catching up, that he would sometimes make cuts to keep the guy from getting him from behind when he could have just run straight at the kicker.
Well, he's one of the first guys that began using the Jumbotron as the rearview mirror.
It's really interesting. Like, and I sat there for a couple minutes after the interview and I was like, that actually makes a lot of sense. And now I got to go back and look at some of the returns. Anyway, so.
Well.
It feels like dawn. Like Bears dawn is tonight at 8 o'clock.
It's more than that. I think it's. Now look, we have tried to have fun with the Hard Knocks thing because it's fun. And we know that reality TV isn't real. It comes close to being real. But it's not. So we know that anytime there is an awareness of a camera or a microphone, it changes the way people behave. Period, paragraph.
Correct.
However, the one thing the Hard Knocks crew is really good at, and this has been alluded to, and you start to hear these things, there is, when produced properly, there ends up being a Stockholm syndrome in a good way. Where
meaning?
You learn... The people who are operating the cameras, the people who are the sound guy operating the boom mic, the gaffers who move into making sure that you're not tripping over cords, they ingratiate themselves. They're people. And there's all kinds of conversations that go on. They're ubiquitous. And when you've heard players and coaches, NFL players and coaches, talk about the Hard Knocks experience after the fact, and a lot of it comes out when you see the outtakes at the end of the series.
Mm-hmm.
When some of that feels a little real, and you see the awareness sometimes. But you start, just like your brain adapts. And you know how when you go to a movie and you're like, oh, I don't like sitting all the way on this side and I'm too close. By the time the previews are over, your brain has fixed it.
Previews too long.
Still, but in general. We have a way, it's a natural way, it's a cognitive development, it's an adaptation. And you start just, you know, like you forget. It happens with chronic pain. Sometimes people just like, my body learned to live with it and we moved along.
Yeah, trust me, I know that.
It's real.
It's very, I'll give you an example just from me dealing with Crohn's, where... I remember like I was going through like a really rough like patch with Crohn's and I was walking like hunched over and they did height and weight after they had changed up the medication.
Mm-hmm.
And I had
shrunk?
No, I had gotten taller because I had just been walking like carrying all of this like fluid and water and stuff. And once that dissipated, I was standing up straight when they measured me.
Wow. But you didn't realize it, is the point.
Had no idea.
You had no idea because there was an adaptation that was going on. And for these teams that have cameras, the first couple days, it's, oh my God, look at all this. And then after a while, they don't see it anymore.
They know how to navigate it because they're like, oh, okay, I can just go back to.
And as you get inured to it, you start to get more natural reactions. Documentarians tell you that all the time, that sometimes their best stuff comes at the end. When they almost like they're part of the team and say, oh, hey, Steve, how are you?
I wonder
it's just someone you see when you get to work.
Ray, when are we having, we're having the director on, right?
We're having one of the producers, Pat Harris, on Thursday.
I wonder how the t-shirts like have evolved over time where you're making these t-shirts kind of in team colors where you're setting yourself apart as a member of the production crew, but you also kind of blend in. And I wonder how that's evolved for Hard Knocks, where instead of them kind of standing out at the beginning of Hard Knocks, where you see like the HBO shirts, like, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like now it's like, well, let's do a better job of camouflaging
blend in
ourselves in this. Remind me to ask that question.
Yeah, that'll be NFL Films producer Pat Harris, who worked on Hard Knocks 125 on Thursday.
So what happens is that players and coaches start to relax a little bit with every day that goes by, with every practice. Oh, that's just, I always see her with that microphone. I always see her with that camera. Okay, it's just someone who's there.
Yep.
And I am really looking forward to learning things about the Bears in a way that we haven't before.
Like what? Like, you give it to me. Like, what's the thing that you're trying to learn from Hard Knocks? Instead of just like the fun that we're having with the bingo card, like, what do you want to take out of what you see tonight and beyond?
I want to see Matt Eberflus, the executive head coach, even with his defensive coordinator responsibilities and his in-game play calls and what happened last year to get him in his comfort zone. I am hoping that that Flus 2.0 keeps up the positive vibes. I'm hoping that I want to hear how he interacts with his assistants in those meetings. I'm interested in some of the closed door stuff, the coaches around the table, how they talk to each other, how he solicits other opinions, who talks when.
Well, apparently one of them is going to be his old linebackers coach.
Okay.
He's going to be Nick Saban.
That'd be great. Fine. I want to hear, because we hear him at the lectern. We've heard him talk to the team in some of these cringy post games and some of the cringy pep talks and some of the cringy press conferences. But when they're talking ball, what does it really sound like? What does he sound like as a head coach? How does he delegate responsibility? And I don't just mean the fun stuff. I don't just mean the nicknames. Okay, man. Okay, man.
What I'd like to see, and if this isn't possible because Caleb is this far advanced in his knowledge of football, but I'd like to see some of the aha moments with him of, oh, I didn't know that. Oh, you want me to do what? Okay, I got it. And I'd like to see that. I'd like to see the, especially since the cadence thing was such an issue, or I guess technically still is, because we don't know if it's going where he is on the spectrum when it comes to the spectrum that we've put together as a show. Complete disaster to Aaron Rodgers, use it as a weapon. And we think he's probably around a 4 right now, like kind of close to midway on that. Let's see that. I wouldn't mind seeing. I hope that the Bears are comfortable enough with him if there is failure, in showing some of the failure and then showing it in a way that allows all of us that aren't up there every day to understand and see growth. There was a false start on this because of this. Well, look what happened in the next practice or the next session, how they were able to get stuff like that together. That's kind of what I'm looking at to see if, once we get into like the football stuff, are we going to see things that aren't magical? Like, I'd like to see a little bit of the mundane. I've seen the shot of Caleb in slow motion running towards the sidelines and then throwing back across his body.
All right, we're going to get and we'll
show,
get
the, show me the version of that where it's picked.
And we'll also get the fringe guy stories and the human Colin Johnson stories
for sure.
Going to be on there. They're going to pick up a few people and they'll follow them around. There's going to be character arcs and all that. But what's going to happen with the ones who matter? How much are we going to see
DJ Moore,
the stars? How much are we going to hear, see,
and I feel
hear?
Like we're going to see the Bears' defensive backfield all up in this episode.
Well, we'll hear them.
As we should.
I know we'll hear a lot of them.
As we should, because Jalen Johnson lends himself to being camera ready. Like, he's got a vibe, you know? And the rest of those guys kind of feed off of that. Where I think Kyler Gordon is probably more quiet, but because of his freakish athletic nature, like, I imagine we'll see some of that play out. And what does that do for Tyreek Stevenson? Like, are we watching a group, as a group, these guys kind of grow into something fun? I'd like to see that.
And we will all continue to speculate on what's a Bears edit. We know that they do have the
Man, I do think we've been spoiled with Hard Knocks Giants. I think we've been spoiled. So I'm kind of like getting myself ready for it to not be as interesting from a football standpoint.
However, I think the new comms brain trust here also knows the value of a little bit of transparency, that it's not going to be a 100% propaganda vehicle.
And we've also, to your point, we've learned that Ryan Poles is also very transparent.
And but we kind of knew that, though. Like, that's the thing that we've learned over the last couple years, is that he doesn't really lie. He struggles with lying.
I agree. And I wonder, though, as to your point, we did know that, but I wonder if more things with a camera in front of his face and more ability to be transparent, if he's going to take it as an opportunity to really let us in.
It's going to be fascinating.
I can't wait.
It's good. And I think you're right. It does feel a little bit like game day. But speaking of game day, I'd like to know who might be healthy for the Bears' next actual game day.
Bears. Well, actual pretend game day.
Still, 45 to 65 snaps is what they want Caleb Williams to get in the next three games.
Okay.
And your offensive line is struggling to stay healthy. They had a walkthrough today. It seems like everyone's cool with the walkthrough. But why don't we talk with Chris Emma from the practice field and get some thoughts on how they're going to approach this week? What are you smiling at?
I just saw a tweet that just made me smile.
Why don't you tell us what the tweet is?
It just says Tim Walz is younger than Brad Pitt.
I mean, that makes sense. He doesn't look it. He's got football coach face.
That's what he's got.
Yeah.
He total coach face.
Yeah, and that's okay.
Because he's a football coach.
Because he's a football coach.
Defensive coordinator.
Damn right he is.
Rod Marinelli should have been the Veep. Can you imagine?
Parkins. That's why the Hard Knocks cameras
that's right.
are here.
They're going to name Parkins yeah. tonight.
He's going to be the VP.
Vice president. Got the ticket. Campaigning.
Chris Emma from the practice field next.
The Bernstein and Holmes Show.
Dan Bernstein, Lawrence Holmes, powerhouse pairing, 10 to 2 every day.
On 670 The Score.
We have a bunch of guys that believe in their ability and also believe in each other. And they trust their teammates and they really care about their teammates. And I think that's what you see. It's kind of an infectious behavior that those guys have. Because when they make plays, you know, they've been together now for quite some time. And I think the addition of Kevin back there has been great because he's a wonderful communicator. He's got really good ball skills.
Well, there it is. Feels like game day for that man and his team. But they are actually walking through. I don't know that it's a pure, full practice, but there is something that appears to be practice-ish. And here to tell us all about it is our Bears reporter, Chris Emma. We should mention the Bears training camp coverage is presented by ChevyDriveChicago.com and the number one draft pick, Chevy Silverado, the official truck partner of the Chicago Bears. And Chris Emma's on Twitter at CEmma670. And he is with us on the Score Hotline presented by Circa Resort and Casino, CircaLasVegas.com. Chris, what are you seeing?
What's up? Yeah, just finishing up the walkthrough portion. You're right, Dan. It will not be a full go today. A little bit of a lighter practice. A brisk autumn-like day. It feels like October out here. And only a few of us, including myself, who did not prepare well enough for the weather. And it's cold out today. So one of those days here in August.
So with this practice, I'm guessing, was it scheduled this way? Or is this one of those things where they're adjusting to the fact that they've got some guys that are injured?
No, it's scheduled this way. Usually out of an off day, they kind of ramp up with these three-day periods. So today's the lighter day. I think they'll pick it up quite a bit tomorrow. And by Thursday, as you start getting ready for that game, you'll have a kind of full go under their longer practices leading up to Saturday and the second preseason game in Buffalo. So just one of those days out there today.
Emma, how worried should Bears fans be that the Bears offensive line has had a great share of injuries?
Yeah, it feels like a rite of passage. I feel like every year, this time of year in early August, we're talking about the Bears dealing with injuries on the offensive line. I'll give you some good news today, because I'm seeing guys back out there. It is a lighter practice, as I mentioned, but Nate Davis is out there participating. Once again, I think he's ramping back up. Darnell Wright present with the guys as well after missing about a week of action. And Tevin Jenkins, who left practice on Sunday, was going through warm-ups and walkthrough as well. He might be limited as well, but a good sign that none of those injuries are long-term.
How comfortable do you think they're going to be with putting Caleb out there? Like, let's say he doesn't have all five of the guys that you expect to be starters. Do you think that they feel comfortable with that?
I think so. If you structure the offense, and however, there's one or two series for Caleb if you get into that on Saturday, quick releases with those passing plays, get the ball out. Run the ball quite a bit. Do everything you can to protect the quarterback through your play calling. There's no reason to have him doing anything crazy for a number of different reasons, but, of course, just to protect him in general. So I think you will see Caleb on Saturday. I don't know that for sure yet. We're going to hear from Matt Eberflus after practice, but I think you're going to get a full dose of that. And, look, there's so many more important things beyond just those reps. It's about going through what he did last week in Canton, the warm-ups. Where's the play clock? What am I going through? What's my pregame routine going to be? What do my guys around me need? There's so many different things that you can go through and experience without getting a significant amount of reps that will really benefit him for the long term.
Does anybody seem concerned, nervous at all about the debut of this invasive documentary?
No. I don't think so. The Bears have been, you know, they lead the editing process as part of this agreement with Hard Knocks, and that was done, I believe, as of last night, honestly. It's something that they really kind of push to the cut-down date, so to speak. So I think they certainly do have their editorial fingers ready and say, we're not going to have this. You definitely don't want that. But I think the experience has gone well, talking with people around the building and also talking with people involved with Hard Knocks. I think the experience has been mutually beneficial. And, you know, for all the years of trying to avoid this fate and trying to not be featured in this documentary, I think everybody's pretty pleased with the way it's going to go so far.
Yeah, there's a lot to look forward to. As far as you're concerned, what's something that you would like to learn?
You know, my favorite thing about Hard Knocks, and more so with the in-season version as well, what you get October, November, into December, is the stuff in the position group meetings, is hearing what these coaches are saying, what they're really focusing on, just getting a sense of how these guys really interact together. I would imagine, I don't know what the first episode's going to look like, but I would imagine there's going to be a lot of Caleb Williams and a lot in the quarterback's room where you're going to really get a sense of kind of how that interaction's going with Caleb, Tyson Bajan, Brett Rippon, Austin Reed. You got a new sounding board of Ryan Griffin, who they've said is really instrumental on the staff. Just seeing the way they all connect with Kerry Joseph as well, the new quarterback's coach. That's one thing I really like. And then you get a sense of what some of these guys who have been dealing with injuries are going through and the rehab process, what's happening behind the scenes. It's great from my perspective as a beat reporter because you get to learn so much that you don't see on a day-to-day basis.
You know, something we haven't discussed a lot was one of the points of pride of Ryan Poles was that he said when they convened, it's going to be hard to make this team. And for the first time, there may be Bears who get released that are quickly snapped up rather than us looking at other rosters and saying, well, where could they improve with other people's cast-offs? So is there, when will you get a sense of the overall talent floor on this team. Is the bottom third of the roster significantly better than it was?
It is. I think it still has a ways to go to be at that level with some of the true championship contenders in this league. And those teams, you know, the Niners and obviously the Chiefs, for example, are built strong 1 through 53. There's no let up when you do have an injury. You're not saying, what do we have here? Or is this guy going to fit? I think the Bears are still a year or two even away from having that true 1 through 53 solidified where you feel truly great feeling playing next man up. And we've seen a glimpse of the offensive line when you got three starters down, and I didn't really know much about some of the guys that were running out with the ones on the O-line on Sunday. It's good you got some of those guys back, but that's just an example of, yes, they've come a long way in the last 2 years in terms of building up the bottom of the roster, but that doesn't happen overnight. That is a gradual, long-term process that happens over 4 to 5 drafts. So I do agree with Ryan Poles to an extent, but I think they still have a ways to go to really solidify that. And I would imagine they will be looking at the waiver wires come that time at the end of August when you are scouting around the league. And I don't think they're quite there yet, but at the very least, you're stronger in the front lines. And if you have good fortunes with health, you've got a contending team.
What did you think of the snub of Jalen Johnson on the top 100 list?
Yeah, I get a laugh out of that. I'll give you a little background here and a story. A couple of years back, this must have been 2018 or 19, and a veteran player in open locker room period with the media came up to me and said, hey, Emma, he pulled me aside, and this is the day when they're running through the ballots. There's an NFL rep handing out pieces of paper. Everybody's kind of got them at their locker stall, and this player, I'm not going to rat him out, but he said, help me through this. And we're kind of going through some of the names, and I kind of just look around the locker room, see guys are kind of guessing and putting down whatever they feel. They got some of their college buddies in there. This particular player kind of asked me, what are we thinking? Who are some of the quarterbacks? And the first name I mentioned was that guy up north, Aaron Rodgers, who was playing an MVP caliber year. And this player in the Bears locker room looks at me and says, no, we're not putting that guy on there. And that was kind of that. And I laugh at the process with a guy like Jalen Johnson, who absolutely got snubbed, and he should be ticked off about it. But it's also a very, very rough process in terms of putting these ballots together. It's also done in like early to mid-December where there's still 4 or 5 games left and you can really form an impression. So you look at Jalen Johnson's number. He had the 2 interception game in October, and then he kind of settled in until December where he got 2 more. He wasn't exactly on the scene as a true superstar by that point. He absolutely was a top 100 player, but I like the fact that he got snubbed and he has that motivation. He's got that contract now, but he still is ticked off and he's got something to prove. So, it's an imperfect process, but you know, if it lights a fire under him, as well as a guy like DJ Moore, then it's beneficial for the Bears.
Is everything okay with the long snapper position? Because I know Patrick Scales is the guy, and then I saw they quietly signed another. Do they just need long snaps? They just need somebody else to do some of this to have another guy?
Yeah, that was a roster maneuver. Cameron Lyons has been around, so that was more so bringing him back and kind of solidifying the roster. Remember, too, Patrick Scales had a torn ACL during the preseason several years back. Obviously missed the entire year. That's been his only time out of action. So I think they just want to be cautious with the guy as a veteran. They value him quite a bit. And, I don't think there's any concern there.
Okay.
How long has he been on this team now?
So 2015, he was almost, I believe, nearly the successor for a guy like Patrick Manley, but he's held that position down for a while. The only setback for him was that ACL. I believe it was 2016 he suffered that. And, he's been Mr. Reliable for them. He's really beloved in that locker room.
He's 36 years old. Like, he's getting to the point where he's starting to be one of those guys.
He's made a good living for himself being a long snapper, man. I tell you that much.
I was working late here last Tuesday with a different assignment for WBBM, and in the media room, the empty media room, comes Patrick Scales, and he just kind of came in to mess around. He was pranking a little bit, tried to get me to evacuate, actually. So, he's a guy who's plenty comfortable in this building, and he's certainly is beloved here.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if a long snapper can't be comfortable, then who can?
Exactly.
Emma, great stuff, man. Thanks for the intel on the voting. That's hilarious.
Yeah. Aaron Rodgers, he was top 5 that year, but he probably could have been number 1 if he got that vote, maybe. I don't know how that works. But, yeah, it's an imperfect process for sure.
That's Chris Emma. He gives us Bears reports when Mark Grody is not doing that. Speaking of Mark Grody, His next installment of Training Camp Live is tonight from 6 to 6:30 right here on The Score. And we've been talking about Hard Knocks. I saw someone on Twitter is asking, where's the bingo card? Where's the Hard Knocks bingo card? We are going to bring it to you. We will post it when we unveil it after we talk to Ian Happ. So hang out and chill with us and you'll get it.
I just want to mention this too, because every time Patrick Scales gets brought up, I start thinking about, is he getting close at all to Patrick Manley's games played record? No, he's not even halfway there yet.
No.
Patrick Manley's games played with the Bears, 245. Patrick Scales is at 120, which is pretty respectable.
A lot of games. But it's not Iron Man Manley.
He needs another 6 or 7 seasons.
You want something fun to do tonight? Join Parkins and Spiegel from 2 to 6 p.m. at The Wall in Marcus Gurney Cinema to register to win prizes and tickets and enjoy specials on food and beverages all day. And then at 8, enjoy the premiere of Hard Knocks on The Wall's big screen. Admission is always free at The Wall.
I love the idea of this, too, because, you know, the movie viewing aspect, the communal viewing aspect of Hard Knocks, it's not something that you're ordinarily going to get. So I'm glad that The Wall got together with us and we're going to do this. It's going to be a lot of fun for people to go out there and do this.
And I expect you to all have your Bernstein and Holmes and Rahimi bingo cards with you, either printed out or on your phone in front of you the entire time, so you're keeping track.
And your Harrison Parkins signs.
Yes. 2024 Harris Parkins. The future is now, or something-ish. when we come back.
Oh, you want to talk about the future?
I'm running out of things to say about the White Sox, but I have to read you a couple of paragraphs from our guy Sox Machine.
Sox Machine.
Jim Margulis did a wonderful,
Sox Machine.
a fabulous, wonderful job describing what makes the White Sox uniquely, historically bad at baseball. And it was a snapshot from something that happened last night. That's next.
Bernstein and Holmes, your midday destination for Chicago sports talk on 670 The Score.
What is it that I owe to fans? And I think one of the things that I owe to fans is to get better as fast as we can possibly get better.
Everyone desperate for this streak to end, but the streak will go on as the White Sox lose 5-1, as the losing streak is now 21 games, as the White Sox etch their name on the wrong side of history.
The White Sox, as has Jim Margulis said, the losing streak is old enough to legally buy alcohol. It's been many, many, many moons, many days since the White Sox have won a game.
One of the people on the crew last night at NBC Sports Chicago, my man Dante, was like, what would have happened if you would have just bet the White Sox to lose and then just kept...
Oh, let it ride?
Yeah.
Somebody could do that math.
He said it was like six figures or something stupid like that.
Well, that's why these things are historic. That's why they're getting national attention now.
They were plus 175 to win yesterday. And I almost did it. I'm like, I mean, for a straight up.
They're due.
No, they're apparently not.
Gambler's fallacy, man. Gambler's fallacy. You can't, don't get trapped. You've been honest.
It's a trap.
You've made a name for yourself as being the guy who knows how to bet White Sox baseball.
Yeah.
Stick with it. You know how to do this.
It's a trap.
Trust your instincts. So here's what Margulis wrote about last night, and this is exquisite. It's absolutely exquisite noticing of things from a baseball perspective. And he writes this on Sox Machine. Zach Geloff must now know how it feels to be invincible. In the eighth inning, the White Sox should have had him out at three different bases after reaching on a leadoff walk. Corey Lee's throw beat him to second on a stolen base attempt, but Lenin Sosa didn't get his glove low enough, and it glanced off the edge of the leather and hit Geloff in the hip. Gavin Sheets's throw beat Geloff to third when he tagged up on a fly ball to right field. but Miguel Vargas set up like a first baseman for the throw and thus was not in a position to adjust to a hop that was a bit higher than he anticipated.
I don't think he's good at baseball.
And he had no momentum for applying a quick tag. So Geloff was essentially playing with house money. When Max Schumann swung over a 1-2 Jared Schuster changeup in the dirt, it bounced far enough away from Corey Lee that Schumann ran to first, but close enough that Lee had time to look at Geloff before throwing to first base. One problem, Geloff didn't care. He broke for home right after Lee angled his body to throw to first. And while Andrew Vaughn's throw would have beat him to the plate, it was off target, and Geloff effectively stole a run. It was a completely unnecessary run, mind you. At the time, the Athletics led 4-1 in the eighth inning against a team that was 0-54 when trailing after six. But then again, it must feel pretty nice for an Oakland team to play somebody that even it doesn't have to take that seriously.
Well, if you're Oakland, you want to make sure that you get that extra run because you're still Oakland.
But how amazing is that? Those little things, the difference between Major League Baseball and not Major League Baseball.
Dan, I feel like you're getting into a territory here where one could question the coaching and or managing.
I would describe these things as manageable.
Yes, they're very manageable, and they're supposed to be the things that Pedro Grifol was going to stop. The talent part, and this is why yesterday I was talking about it, the talent part, he has no control over other than who to play and who not to play. But we know that the roster is not very good. The part where he was supposed to make a difference was that he had the viewpoint of seeing them as an opponent. And as an opponent, he saw that they weren't prepared to play every day. He saw that they weren't very good fundamentally and that he was going to change that.
But he doesn't do anything.
That's the problem, is that he's not very good. While he might be good at identifying what the problems are with the White Sox, which is not that difficult, I would say 99% of White Sox fans could identify what some of the problems have been with the White Sox. The part that he's not good at is implementing a strategy that's going to make them better. These are the things where I say that you can judge the manager even though the roster is bad. When people are like, well, what do you want him to do? Do you want him to go and swing for them? No, I want him to put together a strategy and employ that strategy so that guys are better. I want him to be able to speak to different guys in different ways to get the most out of them. And there's no evidence that Pedro Grifol has been able to do that.
Can you remember something Pedro's done?
Yes. I think that initially his handling of Michael Kopech was pretty good.
Okay.
That's all I got. And I guess you could make the argument that the way that they've handled Garrett Crochet has been good. That does feel like now we know that you've got Ethan Katz and Brian Bannister. That feels a little bit more like them. But I think that his handling of Michael Kopech was good. If I were looking for something to give a positive mark.
I didn't say positive or negative.
I'll give him that.
Like he, as far as what he does since his hiring, other than kind of just be this vague cipher of a presence.
I'll give you something.
Okay.
He hasn't fallen asleep while in the dugout.
Okay. That we know of.
He hasn't gotten caught on camera.
Exactly.
It might be better if he did. It's being awake is his problem. But he hasn't done anything.
So, yeah, if you would have started betting $100 a night against the White Sox, you'd make like $300,000.
The 773 says, at 17 games, the result of betting $100 against the Sox and rolling it would have been $140,000.
Right. So they've lost four more games.
Adding another four to that at those odds.
So and like $500,000.
Continuing to roll it. That is amazing. That is absolutely amazing.
Yeah, now they're like where the White Sox have been able to joust at windmills of the local media. Now they have their badness has reached a national level. Get Up this morning did a whole segment on their losing streak with all sorts of statistics. So now they can't even hide. It's a lead on ESPN's bottom line. The streak that they're on, the people are watching now.
You want national attention? You're mad that everybody forgot that you won the 2005 World Series?
And now you're getting the attention that you definitely don't want. And it's sad. Like I keep going back to it being a very sad thing that we're watching. And I do feel bad in some respects for the players, but even like what Margulis is talking about, if you go to Sunday's game, in Sunday's game, the White Sox had the bases loaded in the first inning and didn't score. And then they love to give away 90 feet. And they were getting ready to get out of an inning where Minnesota scores, but they couldn't because a two-hopper to second was fumbled. It's you wonder about, is there a lack of concentration? There's clearly a lack of fundamentals. What are you doing as the manager to make this better? We can talk about the general manager and the owner at another date because we know that they haven't done the manager any favors. But as far as the actual baseball, the job of doing manager of baseball, there's no redeeming quality to Pedro Grifol that we can actually see.
It's one thing to have president of baseball operations. It's another thing to have manager of baseball operations, as if there's another thing to be managed in the dugout. I'm just the manager of the baseball operations. Talk to that guy for all the other stuff.
Like yeah.
All that. Baseball coverage on the score is presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile and you can get tons of benefits and still save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Use their savings calculator to find out how at T-Mobile.com/switch. Our next guest apparently lost his battle with a brick wall, but it only cost him a game. So we will tell him to stop running into brick walls when Ian Happ joins us next on The Score.
Bernstein and Holmes, your midday destination for Chicago sports talk on 670 The Score.
What is it that I owe to fans? And I think one of the things that I owe to fans is to get better as fast as we can possibly get better.
Everyone desperate for this streak to end. But the streak will go on as the White Sox lose 5-1. As the losing streak is now 21 games. As the White Sox etch their name on the wrong side of history.
The White Sox, as Jim Margulis said, the losing streak is old enough to legally buy alcohol. It's been many, many, many moons, many days since the White Sox have won a game.
One of the people on the crew last night at NBC Sports Chicago, my man Dante, was like, what would have happened if you would have just bet the White Sox to lose and then just kept...
Oh, let it ride?
Yeah.
Somebody could do that math.
He said it was like six figures or something stupid like that.
Well, that's why these things are historic. That's why they're getting national attention now.
They were plus 175 to win yesterday. And I almost did it. I'm like, I mean, for a straight up.
They're due.
No, they're apparently not.
Gambler's fallacy, man. Gambler's fallacy. You can't, don't get trapped. You've been on.
It's a trap.
You've made a name for yourself as being the guy who knows how to bet White Sox baseball.
Yeah.
Stick with it. You know how to do this.
It's a trap.
Trust your instincts. So here's what Margulis wrote about last night, and this is exquisite. It's absolutely exquisite noticing of things from a baseball perspective. And he writes this on Sox Machine. Zach Geloff must now know how it feels to be invincible. In the eighth inning, the White Sox should have had him out at three different bases after reaching on a leadoff walk. Corey Lee's throw beat him to second on a stolen base attempt. But Lenin Sosa didn't get his glove low enough, and it glanced off the edge of the leather and hit Geloff in the hip. Gavin Sheets's throw beat Geloff to third when he tagged up on a fly ball to right field. But Miguel Vargas set up like a first baseman for the throw and thus was not in a position to adjust to a hop that was a bit higher than he anticipated.
I don't think he's good at baseball.
And he had no momentum for applying a quick tag. So, Geloff was essentially playing with house money. When Max Schumann swung over a 1-2 Jared Schuster changeup in the dirt, it bounced far enough away from Corey Lee that Schumann ran to first, but close enough that Lee had time to look at Geloff before throwing to first base. One problem, Geloff didn't care. He broke for home right after Lee angled his body to throw to first. And while Andrew Vaughn's throw would have beat him to the plate, it was off target, and Geloff effectively stole a run. It was a completely unnecessary run, mind you. At the time, the Athletics led 4-1 in the eighth inning against a team that was 0-54 when trailing after six. But then again, it must feel pretty nice for an Oakland team to play somebody that even it doesn't have to take that seriously.
Well, if you're Oakland, you want to make sure that you get that extra run because you're still Oakland.
But how amazing is that? Those little things, the difference between Major League Baseball and not Major League Baseball.
Dan, I feel like you're getting into a territory here where one could question the coaching and or managing.
I would describe these things as manageable.
Yes, they're very manageable, and they're supposed to be the things that Pedro Grifol was going to stop. The talent part, and this is why yesterday I was talking about it, the talent part, he has no control over other than who to play and who not to play. But we know that the roster is not very good. The part where he was supposed to make a difference was that he had the viewpoint of seeing them as an opponent. And as an opponent, he saw that they weren't prepared to play every day. He saw that they weren't very good fundamentally and that he was going to change that.
But he doesn't do anything.
That's the problem, is that he's not very good. While he might be good at identifying what the problems are with the White Sox, which is not that difficult, I would say 99% of White Sox fans could identify what some of the problems have been with the White Sox. The part that he's not good at is implementing a strategy that's going to make them better. These are the things where I say that you can judge the manager even though the roster is bad. When people are like, well, what do you want him to do? Do you want him to go and swing for them? No, I want him to put together a strategy and employ that strategy so that guys are better. I want him to be able to speak to different guys in different ways to get the most out of them. And there's no evidence that Pedro Grifol has been able to do that.
Can you remember something Pedro's done?
Yes. I think that initially his handling of Michael Kopech was pretty good.
Okay.
That's all I got. And I guess you could make the argument that the way that they've handled Garrett Crochet has been good. That does feel like now we know that you've got Ethan Katz and Brian Bannister. That feels a little bit more like them. But I think that his handling of Michael Kopech was good. If I were looking for something to give a positive mark.
I didn't say positive or negative.
I'll give him that.
Like he, as far as what he does since his hiring, other than kind of just be this vague cipher of a presence.
I'll give you something.
Okay.
He hasn't fallen asleep while in the dugout.
Okay. That we know of.
As far as we know. He hasn't gotten caught on camera.
Exactly.
Might be better if he did. It's being awake is his problem. But he hasn't done anything.
So, yeah, if you would have started betting $100 a night against the White Sox, you'd make like $300,000.
The 773 says, at 17 games, the result of betting 100 against the Sox and rolling it would have been 140K.
Right. So they've lost four more games.
Adding another four to that at those odds.
So and like $500,000.
Continuing to roll it. That is amazing. That is absolutely amazing.
Yeah, now they're like where the White Sox have been able to joust at windmills of the local media. Now they have their badness has reached a national level. Get Up this morning did a whole segment on their losing streak with all sorts of statistics. So now they can't even hide. It's a lead on ESPN's bottom line. The streak that they're on, the people are watching now.
You want national attention? You're mad that everybody forgot that you won the 2005 World Series?
And now you're getting the attention that you definitely don't want. And it's sad. Like, I keep going back to it being a very sad thing that we're watching. And I do feel bad in some respects for the players, but even like what Margulis is talking about, if you go to Sunday's game, in Sunday's game, the White Sox had the bases loaded in the first inning and didn't score. And then they love to give away 90 feet. And they were getting ready to get out of an inning where Minnesota scores, but they couldn't because a two-hopper to second was fumbled. It's you wonder about, is there a lack of concentration? There's clearly a lack of fundamentals. What are you doing as the manager to make this better? We can talk about the general manager and the owner at another date. Because we know that they haven't done the manager any favors. But as far as the actual baseball, the job of doing manager of baseball, there's no redeeming quality to Pedro Grifol that we can actually see.
It's one thing to have president of baseball operations. It's another thing to have manager of baseball operations, as if there's another thing to be managed in the dugout. I'm just the manager of the baseball operations. Talk to that guy for all the other stuff.
Like yeah.
All that. Baseball coverage on The Score is presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile and you can get tons of benefits and still save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Use their savings calculator to find out how at T-Mobile.com/switch. Our next guest apparently lost his battle with a brick wall, but it only cost him a game. So we will tell him to stop running into brick walls when Ian Happ joins us next on The Score.